Let's talk NBA. Joining us via the Digits Hotline right now, we've got J.A. Adonde from ESPN.com. How you doing?
Good. How you doing?
Doing good. Thanks for being on. Hey, before we talk NBA, did you see any of the Bill Belichick press conference?
I did watch it this morning. I watched it twice, actually. And, yeah, very subtly, basically, talk to Tom, talk to the NFL, don't talk to me.
Yeah, that's kind of what I got out of it, too. You know, I will tell you this, though. Look, I watched it. I've listened to it a couple of times also. I kind of believe him. I don't have a big problem with most of the things that he said.
Well, the one thing, though, the discrepancy, I would say, is that he talks about how he likes to use various conditions of balls to, you know, simulate everything in practice, and that he said if the players don't like the condition of the ball, he'll make it even worse so that they can be prepared for everything in the course of a game. You know, so to have that much attention to detail to the footballs during practice and then say that on game day you have no idea whatsoever what the process is, what the chain of custody is for the footballs, you know, that you have no idea whatsoever how game balls are used when you are known for your attention to detail and for micromanaging even. That's the one thing that rings a little hollow to me, to say you can be that meticulous in practice,
right,
and then you can have no care whatsoever about the condition of the footballs on game day.
Yeah, it's a little contradictory. What's going to come of it, do you think?
I think if it weren't for what the Patriots have done in the past and what the NFL has been through this year, it really would be nothing. But the fact that they're repeat offenders, the fact that Goodell's ability to adjudicate, you know, the NFL problems has come into question this year, starting with the Ray Rice situation, I think it will be more severe than normally. And the fact that all the attention is focused on the Super Bowl. But if you think about it, I think the NFL in general considers this a minor offense. The standard fine for this situation would be $25,000. You know, that doesn't rise to a high-level crime in the NFL's view. But the circumstances, I think, will bring about a harsher punishment than under, if this were just a normal week 12 and they were found to have used underinflated balls.
So if you're Belichick, if you're Robert Kraft, if you're the Patriots, if it's only 25 grand and you can be done with this discussion and kind of have it go away, I would just pay the money and not fight it. What would you do?
I would do that if that's what it comes down to. But I just wonder if, because of the PR situation and because of the optics of it, if the NFL isn't forced to come down with a much harsher punishment. And then if I'm the Patriots, I'm saying, look, you know, you're just doing this because all the eyes are on you right now. You're just trying to make an example of us. But I do think the fact that their prior conviction for Spygate has to come into play here.
Yeah, but I would almost think this, J.A., is that I would say, if I'm Robert Kraft, I go, hey, Roger Goodell, remember a few months ago I was one of the only owners that had your back? I was your buddy, and you're going to throw the book at me now? Well, come on, I was cool with you during this whole Ray Rice, the way it was handled.
Well, and Robert Kraft has been one of, you know, the leading voices in the NFL among ownership in a number of areas. And, you know, I'm sure it would pain Roger Goodell greatly to have to come down harshly on him in this franchise. And, yes, he did have Roger Goodell's back during the worst of the Ray Rice situation. But this is why you get paid the big bucks if you're Goodell.
Yeah,
you know, you can't play favorites, and you have to set an example for your league. And I think it would go a long way if they say, okay, if they can crack down on the Patriots like this, then, you know, they'll keep the rest of the people in line. But I think they did exact a difficult and a harsh penalty on them for Spygate. I mean, a $500,000 fine, loss of a first-round pick. You know, that was a $500,000 personally for Belichick, plus $250,000 fine to the franchise. So, you know, I thought they came down. I thought they were even more severe on the bounty gate, which I think warranted that, because you're talking about threatening the health and the welfare of players by placing bounties on them. So that severe punishment, taking away the draft picks and suspending Peyton for the year, that was warranted as well. And if you think about it, this doesn't rise to that level.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
You're going to compare using underinflated footballs to targeting players for severe hits. You know, this is a much greater threat, or I'm sorry, that the bounty situation was a much greater threat. But this is just the timing of the circumstances have built this into a greater offense than it really is.
So if you're Tom Brady, do you address this, or you just kind of hope it goes away?
He has to now, and Belichick put him on the spot, and I thought it was interesting that the Patriots moved Brady's media availability up from tomorrow to today.
Yeah.
So he has to get on this now, and, you know, maybe just fess up. Hey, you know, we've heard other quarterbacks talk about their preference for underinflated balls, for overinflated balls, And, you know, I would hate to have them throw this on some ball boy who acted upon orders and, you know, took a needle to the ball and then let some air out. You know, somebody's going to have to take responsibility for this. Belichick clearly indicated that he's not going to be the one to step forward and take responsibility for it, even though he seems to take responsibility for everything else that goes right with that program. But now this thing has went astray, and he's putting it off elsewhere. And it looks like it is up to Tom Brady to say, hey, it was under my direction, because none of these footballs would be altered if it weren't for Tom Brady, right? I mean, if they're going to change them to anyone's liking, wouldn't it make sense that it would be to Tom Brady's? It's not going to be to Belichick. He's not the one that throws it. It's not going to be a ball boy just taking upon himself to deflate these balls. So it would have to point toward Tom Brady.
And it wouldn't even be the backup quarterback, whoever he is. Do they have a backup quarterback for New England? I don't even know anymore who it is.
Who well, remember, once upon a time, Matt Castle was a backup quarterback, and he made a ton of money to go play for Kansas City. So being Tom Brady's backup can actually be a good thing for your career.
Yeah, wear the visor, got the clipboard. You're in great health, nothing like it. J.A. Adondi joins us, ESPN.com. He covers the NBA. Man, I am loving watching the Atlanta Hawks getting done what they're doing. And you know what's fascinating to me is that this past summer there was all the controversy with the ownerships and some of the things that they handled. And I thought, and maybe I'm disconnected from it, J.A., that that might be a distraction with what happened with Danny Ferry and the ownership with some of the improprieties. Let's just put it that way. But the way this team has come together and just looks so good has been impressive.
Well, not to mention the fact the team's up for sale. So Everyone has to wonder when new ownership comes in, who's going to stay, who's going to be gone. So a tremendous amount of distractions, and they have come together so well, and they're playing with so much confidence right now. You know, they're really tough to beat. They, as I was watching them rack up another victory last time, I'm saying, you know, they're going to be hard to beat. I don't see them losing anytime soon. You know, you might catch them on a back-to-back, tough back-to-back somewhere. But just the way they're playing, and they're not dependent on one guy. You know, so if somebody has an off night, somebody else can fill it up. But seems like nobody's having an off night right now. I think Kyle Korver is shooting 62%. I think that was a number I read from three-point range in his last five games. It's amazing the amount of open shots he gets. You would think that it would be somebody's assignment to just stick with Kyle Korver and make sure nobody leaves him. But the way they're running their offense, they're drawing so much attention elsewhere, and then they are doing such a great job of finding the open man. It's basic basketball, but it's beautiful basketball to watch because not many teams are that committed to playing that way.
Is this a team that can put it together and make the big run for the ring? Because, you know, sometimes you see teams like this, the record's amazing, and then they fold when it comes playoff time. Are they built to win in the playoffs?
I don't think so. And it's funny to remind me of another Hawks team 20 years ago, the 93-94 Hawks, who had the best record in the Eastern Conference that year. And nobody remembers them because they did what Atlanta usually does, and they didn't make it past the second round of the playoffs. So, you know, I think that could be the case again with this team because they don't have that superstar. And people hate to say it, but, you know, find me the number of teams that win without a top five player in the league. And everybody's going to point to the 2004 Detroit Pistons. But that group did have Rasheed Wallace, who, when he wanted to, could be one of the best players in the league. When you talk to guys that had to guard him, they acted like he was one of the best players in the league. He just didn't have that mentality to play that way every single night. But at his best, he was as good as that and as unstoppable as anyone in the league. And that team just had a tremendous defensive presence, starting with Ben Wallace. You know, can this team do that? I just think they're going to run up against a LeBron James. They're going to run up against Derrick Rose if he's right for the playoffs, or the way Washington plays. So, you know, John Wall could take over. Paul Pierce can have one of those flashback fourth quarters and win a game. He won two playoff games for Brooklyn last year. I think he's going to win a game or two for Washington in the fourth quarter in these playoffs. The other thing is you just have a team that locks into you, and that's the main difference in the playoffs is that. And one of the reasons you saw, say, those Phoenix teams could be so effective during the regular season and during the playoffs, they could be figured out. Because when you play a style that's different from everyone else in the regular season, teams don't have a chance to prepare. You know, one minute you're playing Cleveland, the next you're playing the Knicks, the next you're playing Brooklyn, and then you come in and, you know, maybe you're coming on a back-to-back. You haven't even had a shoot-around to walk through and really see and have a chance to space it out on the floor what the Hawks are doing. When you have a full week to prepare nothing but the Atlanta Hawks, I think you'll see teams doing a better job of taking away what it is the Hawks want to do.
We got J.A. Adondi on the show, NBA Insider, ESPN.com, talking NBA. Cleveland seems to be getting their ducks in a row a little bit. Is this just part of the ebbs and flow and the growing pains of what happens when you make all these wholesale changes in the offseason and you bring in these superstars? Can they get it together, or is this pretty much how it's going to be throughout the season?
I think you've seen them start to get it together, and I think you'll see a better product than what you saw the first 2 months. It's natural. I mean, these guys haven't played together. They haven't played for this coach. This coach hasn't been in the NBA. There's all these adjustments they have to make. They've turned over that roster almost entirely. Basically, Kyrie Irving, Anderson Varejao was hurt. You know, that's about it if you go back and look from the roster from a couple years ago. So that's difficult to do. To incorporate all those new pieces. It's not easy to play with LeBron. It's not easy to sacrifice as much of your game as, say, Kevin Love is being asked to sacrifice. It makes me have even more respect for Chris Bosh retroactively because, you know, the way he was able to bring his game all the way down for the need of the team. We'll see them get better. I don't think they can put it all together in 1 year. Again, it's rare, just like you point to the 2004 Detroit Pistons as a team that's doing without a superstar, to go from a franchise that, you know, hasn't won a playoff series in 1 year to winning a championship the next year. That's another thing that you only see once every three decades or so. And the Boston Celtics did it when KG and Garnett got to town. KG and Ray Allen got to town. But, that's it. That's it, where you see a team just come together that hasn't won a playoff series the year before and go all the way and win a championship. So I don't think the Cavaliers are in that class, especially when two of their key players have never played a playoff game before. So you're asking this team not only to learn how to play together, you're asking Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving how to figure out playoff basketball.
What about the Golden State Warriors? Are they one of those teams? Because they're just killing it right now. They look so good. And they look tough. When you got Bogut in the lineup, you got David Lee in there, a couple of big guys, and Iguodala, they look good to me. But can they make it through that gauntlet of the playoffs?
They can, and use that adjective tough. And it's rare that you have a team that's pretty and tough. You know, and this team plays pretty basketball. It's really fun to watch, but they can be gritty and tough too. Draymond Green and particularly Andrew Bogut in the middle give them that tough presence. And you saw Steph Curry last night, if you're watching the game, sticking up for himself and kind of going after guys on the Houston Rockets. And think about it, they have two chippy rivalries now, like that Houston Warriors rivalry is a little bit chippy, and you also see it whenever they play the Clippers.
Yeah.
That's kind of a feisty series. You know, you saw them go seven games last year, and I think it'd be fun to watch them in the playoffs again this year. And then every time they play the Thunder, it just seems to be a great series as well. And I think this group does have that playoff experience. You have that core that's been through it a couple times, that won a series against Denver that nobody really expected them to win. Now I think they got a good lesson from the San Antonio Spurs the next round. They won two games off of them, but they weren't quite ready to beat a team as experienced as the Spurs. And, you know, they lost in seven to the Clippers last year without Andrew Bogut. So this is a team that could have easily won an additional two playoff series over the last couple of years. So I think they're poised to make a run. Right now, they're the team, I think, you know, if healthy, they're the most complete team and the most experienced team. That they can play the broad range of styles, you know, up-tempo. They can play half-court basketball as well. They can get to the free throw line. Klay Thompson is doing a much better job of driving and picking up free throws. So all these things that you want to see, they're capable of doing.
How about the Rockets, before I let you go? They acquired Josh Smith. He could be an interesting guy to have on the team. Is that going to – are they going to be able to put this together and do better than they were doing without him, or is it – potentially a combustible situation?
I don't think the rise and fall with Josh Smith. I really think it's up to Dwight Howard and, you know, the way they decide to use him, because you can't ask James Harden to play much better than he's been playing. He's been playing great, and yet this team is stuck on good. You know, they're a good team, even though Harden's playing at MVP level, and that kind of concerns me, because I can't imagine him playing much better, and what he's doing right now isn't good enough to make them elite. And Dwight Howard is just kind of forgotten about. They seem to forget him. They don't seem intent on establishing him. He's not giving them that go-to guy. You throw it in there, dump it in. Hey, we can get layups from him easily. You know, he's a low post presence. Maybe he's skewed last night because he's going against one of the better post defenders in Bogut. But I'm just not seeing that from Howard. We're not seeing those kind of dominant, crazy numbers, Wilt Chamberlain-type numbers that he used to put up in Orlando. And I don't know if he's not capable of it or if the way that they're playing, doesn't allow for it, because they're such a three happy team, and, you know, they're running the offense through James Harden. So I think, they brought him there to elevate them into championship contention, and right now Dwight Howard hasn't been doing that.
His name is J.A. Adonde, NBA insider for ESPN.com. Hey, thanks for taking the time to be on the show. I appreciate it. It's always great catching up with you.
All right, good talking to you. Thanks a lot.
Have a great day. There you go, J.A. Adonde.